On this episode of Industrial Talk, we're talking to Stan Schneider, Real-Time Innovations, or RTI, about autonomy, the technology that is needed to encourage and to facilitate autonomy. You need to listen to this podcast. Let's get going.
Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, let the celebration continue on Industrial Talk. This is where we highlight and celebrate you, industrial professionals all around the world, because you're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly, you innovate like nobody's business, you're solving problems, you're keenly focused on that, and you're making my life and the lives of many around the world. Yeah, you take that to the bank. As mentioned, we are talking to Stan Schneider, CEO of RTI, and we're going to be talking autonomy. But there's this whole level of innovation that is needed, so let's get cracking. Whether you like it or not, it is here to stay. You better be in the game. You better find your trusted innovation team to give you the lowdown on what is taking place in industry, what is happening in from an innovation and technology perspective, because it is necessary for you to create that business of resilience, that career of resilience. And I mean, the conversations that I have all the time is how do I, as a company, leverage innovation, leverage technology to help my business be better in the future, whatever it might be, get greater value out of my assets, whatever that is. That conversation happens all the time. And the only way that I can give you guidance on this is you got to find trusted advisors. Trusted, because there's a lot of buzz out there. There's a lot of noise out there on innovation. So Stan, yeah, you can definitely trust that gent, and you can trust the people at RTI. All right. Couple of things before we get into the conversation that I want you to put on your calendar. All right, we need to get back to normal, right? Whatever that is, whatever that next normal is, let's lean on each other to be able to do that. Let's have that that ecosystem of people driving to get back to normal, whatever it might be. I want you to put this event, this wonderful event, on your calendar. It is, of course, the IoT Solutions World Congress, and it is May 10th through the 12th. It's in Barcelona, and I've been very fortunate to be there a couple of times, and it is a spectacular event, and it is just, I mean, you're tripping over people who have just mad skills, and it is a great, great venue to collaborate, to network, to get the most and solve problems and find the individuals or find the companies that can definitely answer those questions. Trusted, right? And that's what we're all about. Now, I'm going to also just encourage you. You need to be a part of the Industrial Talk ecosystem. What does that mean, Scott? Well, it is, of course, an entertainment platform, but an industrial entertainment platform that brings out the human side of all of these incredible leaders, industrial leaders. But the best part about it is that you get to collaborate and you get to connect with people who are just all bent on solving problems and helping each other achieve whatever success they're trying to achieve. Over the years, I've had a number of conversations, as you are well aware, and the conversations always, it's never really the technology. It's always the human side. Who can I work with? Who can I collaborate? Who can I trust with? Who can I? Those are always the questions, always the topic, because everybody wants their business to succeed, their career to succeed. Who do I collaborate with to make sure that that happens? So I'm going to challenge you on these conferences. There's a ton out there. You go out to this website called 10time.com. 10 times S, put an S on that. And you'll see all of the events around the world. Incredible website, by the way. And but the reality is that what are we doing? What are we doing to get the most out of these events for your company, for solving problems? And I'm going to just share with you how we approach these conferences, outside of the fact that we broadcast. Yes, one. And that is just a great way of being able to get the attention that you so desire and deserve, right? So we broadcast live at these events. It's fun. It is nothing short of fun. And then we create this video, and the video is fun, and it highlights all of the wonderful things that are happening at the event and the energy. And it just is a great, great combination, 1-2 punch on how to get that attention you just so deserve. But the reality is that gone are the days that we just go to a conference, drink great bourbon, and eat great food, and yuck it up with many people. It can still happen. But I think we have to be far more pinpoint focused on why are we there? How does it impact our bottom line? What is the return on our efforts, right? And so you have to think in a way of being able to say, okay, I'm going to IoT Solutions World Congress. There's a pre-activity, right? Pre. And then there's during, and then there's post. I break it up in those areas. If the pre-activity includes, I need to schedule firm connections with my existing customers and my quality or whatever quality connections, I'm going to do that. And that requires a lot of pre-work, a lot of work up front. Because when you get to that location, when you get to that site, when you get to the event, you're ready to go. You're ready to roll. You're ready to have that conversation on how your solution, your focus, your whatever it is can help solve problems. And then you fill it up, and then you just keep, because the reality is, we could go out to LinkedIn and say, okay, I'm just going to try to find some quality leads out there, and it's the cost. But the reality at these events that bring everybody together, they're all there, face-to-face. Human interaction is key. Get the most out of it. Okay, so you go to the event. You're on a podcast. You're talking about the subject matter you're talking about. You've already done your pre-work. You're out there now. You're doing your stuff right there. You're broadcasting. It's great. You're getting a value-added, you know, asset right there and then. And then the real rubber is that you follow up. You nurture. You have to keep at it. You've got to continue to nurture the relationships. Listen to what is being said. What are the problems that are being communicated? How does your solution, listen how your solution can solve problems and be able to have that conversation. But the best part and the most important part is that you're focused on that individual's success, right? It's keenly focused. I want that individual, that company to succeed. To do that too, you've got to open doors for that customer too. It's not only just saying, hey, we got a great solution. Here it is. It's wonderful. And it could be that, right? But I want a relationship, and I know many want a relationship that go beyond that. It's like, hey, I hear what you have to say. I know our solution is good, but I'm destined and focused on your success. And therefore, I'm going to introduce you to this particular individual. And you make that introduction. You're part of the solution. Talk about goodwill. Talk about the way to collaborate. And I'm telling you right now, trusted individuals, important. Solutions, innovation, important. But the reality is you don't have all the answers, and that means you need to collaborate. And the more you collaborate, the more you have that conversation, you will succeed. And you have to succeed because you're that important. You are. You're just that important. All right, let's get on with Stan Schneider. So I was very fortunate to be able to interview Stan at IoT Solutions World Congress in Barcelona. Great guy. And you'll quickly recognize that he's definitely smarter than me. He is. He's got a real sense of honesty and a desire to truly solve problems. So as we start talking about trusted people, Stan is one of them. And if you're looking and if you're trying to say, okay, autonomy is an important component to my business, and I can't send this data to the cloud. I need something that is right there so that there's quick response. Like, let's put it this way. Automobiles, yes, you need quick response. Stan knows all that. His team, RTI, knows all that. And I think that you need to reach out. Schneider, CEO, Real Time Innovations. They just go by RTI. That's the website. So enjoy the conversation with Stan. Stan, welcome to Industrial Talk. Thank you very much for finding time in your busy schedule and to talk to the best, and I mean the best, and the well-educated listeners that industry has on Industrial Talk. How are you doing there, Stan?
Great.
The last time we spoke, it was in Barcelona. And again, I think I shared with you prior to this conversation that I can't even remember that. I feel like I had hair at that time. Well, it's. I'm so glad that you said yes. And the reason we're doing this is, one, absolutely want to know what's happening at RTI, what's happening with Stan, and what's all of that. That's all important. And also, we need to talk about getting our life back in order and whatever that looks like from the IoT Solutions World Congress. Before we get all into that, give us a little background, Stan, on who you are.
Hi, I'm Stan Schneider. I run a company called Real Time Innovations, RTI. We are a software framework provider for autonomy. We're the largest in the market by a pretty good margin. We build a software that allows you to put together intelligent distributed systems outside of the cloud. So people think AI is everywhere. It's really not. It's mostly in the cloud, and we are trying to enable the real world to be more intelligent by taking those smarts and letting them run outside cloud.
So I don't have to go to the cloud with your solution.
No, we do things like, you know, we call it autonomy. Everybody, you say autonomy, everybody thinks vehicles, and we are in 250 autonomous vehicle designs of an amazing variety of things. But we're also
I got to ask the question. Is it really going to happen? Will the future just have autonomous vehicles where I can just jump in, get on an autonomous vehicle, or my car will be autonomous? Will that ever happen? I mean, really?
Well, sure. Autonomous vehicles are everywhere now. You probably don't realize that. But, you know, we started out doing flying things. Lots of autonomous flying things out there. It's a much easier problem. But jumping in your car and drive, as soon as you get the bio prejudice out of your head that people are better drivers than computers are, you can do that. I started my career crashing cars for a living.
Did you really? Know.
I did. Yeah, University of Michigan. I was a biomechanics impact researcher.
You're the first one. Just FYI, I don't know many. You're the first one. Congratulations. A certificate.
Well, I was very excited about that. This was a long time ago, but you know, back then we were working on things like smarter airbags, multi-stage airbags, and side impact protection systems, and crumple zones, and crushable steering columns, and child seats, and wheelchair restraints, and on and on and on. We have all of those things now and more, along with, you know, stuff like anti-lock brakes and electronic stability control and anti-drunk driving laws. And back when I was there, I was all excited because 45,000 people a year in the U.S. were dying in car crashes.
See, that's pretty cool. We take it for granted now, right? We just do.
The sad part is that today, or I don't mean pre-pandemic, I suppose, there were still 40,000 dying a year in car crashes. So from a safety perspective, you know, we're driving more miles, so it's better per mile. But, you know, we couldn't even run tests more than 35 miles an hour. It's just too much energy above that. And I don't believe you can ever make cars safe without fixing the number one safety problem in cars, which is you.
Well, maybe pre-pandemic, but right now during pandemic, I never drive. So super safe.
Has sort of changed a lot of things, but I do think that, you know, at least from a statistical point of view, autonomous vehicles in many many environments will be better than non-autonomous vehicles very soon. And it's the computers will make mistakes you would never make. You know, they'll some of the famous ones, they'll mistake a truck for a sign they can go under or something like that. But you make mistakes the computer would never make, and falling asleep and driving drunk. And
personally, I think it's going to happen.
Everybody's done that. They shouldn't do that. And it's just, so I do think there will be a time when, in a place, it's not going to be everywhere immediately. But the autonomous vehicles are coming, and they will be safer.
See, I'm all into it, and I'm very bullish on it. I think it's definitely going to happen. Yeah, it seems sort of, Logan's Run-ish, I guess, future. But the reality is smart people like you are making it happen and thinking through it, and it just gets better. And so my goal, my hope is that all I have to do is jump in. I don't have to drive, and I'm safer. And I have to deal with traffic either. I could just sort of sit back and, hang out. All right. Let's talk a little bit about IoT. In our conversation prior to this conversation, I thought this was absolutely brilliant. And listeners, agree or disagree, don't send me a text. I don't want to hear it. IoT is poorly defined. And I agree with you 100% on that one, because it's like the miscellaneous file, right?
It's worse than that.
Internet of Things, and it's like,
right,
things. And give us why do you say that?
Well, everything by definition is a thing. That's what everything
means.
So Internet of Things doesn't really mean much of anything, except that everything has a computer in it and everything is connected. And it's awful hard to name anything that won't have a computer in it and be connected in just a very few years, 20, 30 years out there. I mean, computers are increasing in performance and decreasing in cost at a stunning rate. I went to the University of Michigan. I remember going to the football games, and it'd be a stadium with 100,000 people in it, 100,000 people. And you just feel like this little thing, right, with this huge press of intelligence around you and humanity. Well, computers increase in performance 100,000 times every 25 years. So where I was a little thing in that stadium, imagine that entire stadium is available for the computing I have today. And 25 years from now, we'll have 100,000 stadiums, a factor of 10 billion. No, actually more than 10 billion. 10 billion in 40 years. So it's more than that in 50 years.
But it's even that time frame, it's compressing even faster. There's a velocity out there. By the way, that's bucket list stuff for me. I want to go up to Ann Arbor. I want to be in that stadium just to see it, because it's perfectly shaped. It's like it's a perfect bowl. I like it. All right.
Yeah,
I digress.
But 10 billion X in 50 years, it's hard to understand that. It really is the only thing that matters. You're building a system that has to last for the next 30, 50 years, even 20 years. It really is the only thing you should be thinking of. It's the only factor that matters. How do you take advantage of intelligence, which people don't get today. But I do think the IoT is really pretty much divided into three huge, I call them spheres, buckets, whatever you want to call them. There's the device monitoring bucket, which is most of the consumer world and a lot of the industrial world too, where you have a device and it talks to a single cloud service. There may be lots of devices, but it's just one cloud service. And so, think like your Nest thermostats or your Fitbits.
Right here, baby.
Right, exactly. It's connected to a single cloud service, and it can monitor it, can control things. In the industrial space, you'll hear about, predictive maintenance and things like that, where it's monitoring a device. That's one class. Another class, that's probably the biggest class, by the way, because it's sort of the easiest in a lot of ways. The other class is intelligent optimization, where you sensorize a factory or a pipeline and you collect a whole bunch of data and you get it up to the cloud and you think about it and you use that to optimize the system, typically not very real time. maybe only optimize it once a month. You're going to change how you manufacture something or what you manufacture based on the market or something. Huge class. A lot of the big platforms out there.
Hold it, before I forget, isn't there an overlap between the device and then the Intel optimization? You need a bunch of devices to create that intelligent operations, right?
Yeah, but it's not, I don't know of any, maybe a strong statement. Of course, there's overlap of everything. It's an internet of everything, right?
Things. We're talking things. More things.
But I don't know of very many device monitoring things that are also integrated in where they're trying to control and activate devices. It's integrated in with a big data collection AI for more than many, many different types of devices. Maybe there are. I'm sure there are, actually. Take that back. It's not a huge thing. It's not really my world anyway. My world, we live in the edutonomy world, third big sphere, where instead of having the intelligence in the cloud might be a player, but the real intelligence needs to be in the edge, in the field, where it's running a car or a medical robot or a power system or a defense system, a radar or something. You have to have high performance, high reliability. You could never really count on. I would never, safety research, I would never delegate my safety to anything off vehicle. It's just too many failure modes.
So the edge as a whole is there's a there's a speed, right? So I have everything sort of there at the site, right? If I sent that information to the cloud, there's a latency. Is that the benefit of this?
That's a benefit. Reliability is probably a bigger benefit. The ability to handle lots of high performance connectivity is another benefit. It depends on the application you're trying to do, but the real benefits to having intelligence there with you is you can make sure it's always available, make sure it's always fast, make sure it's connected in the right way. We sell a connectivity technology that's data centric, and I can explain that if you want.
But yeah, I do, because you're just full of interesting jargon that I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. Well, I mean, trying to make it as simple as possible.
Yep.
In the intelligence world, data is everything, right? So data in the cloud is the reason Facebook and Google have such a good map of you is they got lots of data about you. Data is everything. Everybody sort of gets that today. But in the cloud, you have, to make a model of you at Facebook, I've got days, months, years, decades to figure out stuff about you and connectivity between you. If you want to make a data-centric model of an intelligent vehicle that's moving, the world changes every millisecond or every several milliseconds anyway. And so you have to, it becomes not about the data itself, but about the data flow, getting the right data to the right place at the right time. Right place might be an AI or an intelligent algorithm that has to have enough data about its surroundings to make decisions. And those decisions have to happen in 20 milliseconds, not 20 weeks. And so it's the same concept as the data centric cloud world. It's just now really more about data flow than it is about the data itself. You have to get the right data. That's essentially what we provide.
Can I say that there are different avenues of data? Like sometimes data could go into the cloud because I don't need it right now. I mean, it goes up there. It's fine And then there's data that has to reside on premise or in the edge or whatever, so that I have the necessity have the capability of accessing it, or it delivers insights rapidly. Are there avenues like that? Not everything needs to be at the edge.
No, it's definitely there's always layers. Like there's an architecture called the layered data bus, which is a good example of that, where you have something inside the vehicle, it's a car. People get cars more than other things, even though it's only a small part of the opportunity out there. But, you know, cars has LIDARs and radars and video and intelligence and other kinds of sensors and actuators that it has to run. And that environment has a very high speed data flow requirements to get the right information to the right intelligence at the right time so it can make decisions. You know, if you're not in the car, if you're some control center or something that's monitoring 50,000 cars, you might want to know things that are derived from that car, like where the cars are, how fast they're moving, whether they have people in them or not, whether they have some maintenance problem, if there's somebody stuck. You know, what do you do if you have an autonomous vehicle that's stuck in a construction zone? You can't really drive anybody there. I'm actually on the board of an organization called the Teleoperations Consortium. Not that I think you can delegate safety to a remote operator. You can certainly delegate getting unstuck to a remote operator. You know, is another layer of different kinds of data. They don't necessarily need direct access to the LIDAR cloud, but they may well need direct access to the video to see what's going on. And then there's, you know, another layer even above that where you're going to optimize the use of your vehicles and decide whether you're going to deploy them all to northeastern Phoenix or, you know, even take some out of that market, or what kind of vehicles might be more effective, or who pays the most money, and the sort of kind of things you do in the cloud today, which is really becoming more of an optimization, intelligent optimization problem. So those things are all mixed together.
This is what, you know, you've just started, you chirped a lot happening in that little segment. You chirped connectivity, this, that, do this, but I don't even know where to start. And
I can tell you where to start.
Talk to me.
Start with the data. Start with the systems and then try, what data do I need out of this system? Data is coming out of the LIDAR? What data is coming out of the operators or whatever? And they try to build a system, a design around the system as components. Object-oriented designs that are really designing around objects, which are almost always map to physical things. If you instead just turn it all around, I have a great slide where I show an upside down picture of a lake in a forest. Look at a nice reflection. It looks okay, but there's something wrong. You flip it over and everything sort of changed. If you just think about what data do I have, what data do I need? It's why it's called data centric. You start with the data and then you can build the components around that data, everything gets very much easier to deal with.
See, I like that.
It's much harder than you think to actually do that. But
yeah, because if I saw this big old cauldron of data, right, and it's swarming around, I even have a hard time figuring out that, is that data, do I want that one, that one, that one? Does that bring,
right.
And that requires some skilled eyeballs. It's not my eyeballs. It's somebody else's eyeballs. But to do that, I like the fact that if you have the data, and if that data allows you to be a better, you know, make better decisions, then yeah, you would.
Right.
And then if that's the case, then yeah, okay, let's design something around that. Go ahead.
My favorite architecture diagram has exactly two boxes. It has the application, whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, at almost any level. And then inside that, there's another box that says data. And what data centricity does is logically makes it look like all the data in the entire system. This could be this 50,000 vehicle cars and all their LIDARs and all of their, you know, speeds and motor currents or whatever are all logically available to any application that asks for it, with the right quality of service, like delivery requirements, the security and all that kind of thing. It makes it way easier to write applications and way easier to do things like make a mobile. If the application can just request its data and I need it, you know, maybe I need it with 100 milliseconds delay, that's the latency you're talking about. I know how big it is and I know all the kind of thing. If I can meet that spec, I can be on the vehicle. I can be in some controller on the vehicle. I can be in the cloud. I can have the vehicle drive around and change networks. It doesn't matter because my application's only dependent on the data. It just makes it way simpler design it's definitely a leap of faith in your thinking as a designer to think about the data first, because it, for most people, it's
there's a lot of companies out there that have been collecting data. They just have data. I've got data. And then they deployed these systems, but they really do not take advantage of the data. For a point of clarification, Stan, you mentioned it a couple of times. For some of the individuals that don't know, can you define LIDAR? What does that mean?
LIDAR is basically laser ranging. LIDAR shines a laser, usually scans. So think of it doing that, and it's measuring how far away each of those scan points are. So just like your old-fashioned CRT monitor would scan the screen and draw a picture, it's doing almost the inverse. It's scanning an environment and giving you 3D distances to everything in the environment. And these things can be pretty fast, and they can be very accurate. But, of course, you pay money for both of those features. You can have cheap ones that just do one line, basically. It'll give you some idea.
But everything else is the price is coming down.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you see them spinning around, the mechanical ones spinning around on the top of vehicles. Those are relatively high-end ones that may have a lot of ability to get a lot of lines, and they get a new update every time they spin around. There's some fancier ones that are all solid state that use phased arrays and things like that to change where the laser's scanning. It's cheaper, it's not as accurate, can be faster. Someday it'll be fast and cheap. Faster, better, cheaper, right? Choose any two.
It is, but it's going to happen. And I agree with you 100% on that one. It just is, because there are smart people like you and others that are going to make that happen. And I mean, the future is bold from my perspective. I wish I was younger, just because, but you've been doing it for, look at that, your stack guard out there, 17 years. You've been leading the way for a long time.
I mean, you've been in the data centric world since 2006. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a while. It's an exciting space right now. It's just amazing what's going on. We see it everywhere.
Vehicles
and medical, and we run systems.
I'm reading this book, and it talks about technology convergence. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not going to spout the title of it, but it's that convergence. And then people like you can see other technologies that are going out there, and you're saying, hey, I could use that. That'll help me here. And you put it all together, and it just creates a more, a better solution going forward. It's really an interesting time.
I mean, we sell integration technology, so I'm 100% behind. Integration is the hard part, but I find that there's an even bigger blocker out there, and that bigger blocker is just flat-out confusion.
And I'm the president of that fan club, because I try, but it's, you're right, there's a lot of confusion out there. But
there's an alphabet's word connectivity space. There's an alphabet soup connectivity technologies out there. And everybody, they all use the same kind of words. They send data, they have latency, they have throughput, they have... And in reality, they're just completely different. They're as different as trains are from tennis shoes. Yes, they're both transportation technologies, but you can't interchange them. And so we actually have an online tool, if I can, plug. Just go connectivitytool.rti.com, and you can answer a bunch of questions, and it'll tell you at least which standards are somewhat appropriate to your world.
See, that's cool.
And we mostly did that originally to stop people from calling us with problems we can't solve.
Wow. So let's create a tool, and then we can solve that. Now we can.
Yeah. Well, we want to talk to the people that would fit. I can ask you five questions and tell you if you're going to buy our product. And they're simple things like, have you said the word millisecond in the last 2 weeks? do you have more than 10 programmers? They aren't like, give me your design specs. They're just very simple things that you can ask people to find out if you're even in the right galaxy.
See, I think that there's a necessity, and I like the simplicity of that approach. I think that there tends to be a greater amount of complexity that doesn't need to be there, which then creates greater confusion. So if there's any way of being able to simplify that message, I'm all in. Because I guarantee you the majority of people, well, let's put it that way. I'm definitely not a target market, but I like this.
You're looking at Connectivity, you have a nice little online tool. The IIC did a great piece of work called the Industrial Connectivity Framework that has all these, it's like, I don't know, 130 dense pages of PDF I would not expect most people to read, but we sort of distilled that down in just a few questions that direct people where to go if they're looking at MQTT or Kafka or DDS or whatever.
See, that's just a must. Go out to RT.
It's all automated. And we're not trying to sell anything. We're actually trying to direct people to go to the right way so we don't deal with the ones that are going the wrong way. It's expensive.
He mentioned iiconsortium.org or Industry IoT Consortium. There's a new rebranding out there. And I'm stumbling with the new branding of it. It's Industry IoT Consortium. That's a mouthful, but they got a lot of smart people out there too.
Founded or co-founded the IoT Solutions World Congress.
Look at you, Segwagon. If this whole RTI thing doesn't work out, you've got a great and beautiful future in podcasting there, Stan. So tell us why IoT Solutions World Congress.
I wouldn't want to compete with you. That's a disaster.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Disaster. Don't compete with me. Let me ask you this.
Tell us why what?
Why is IoT Solutions World Congress important to you?
Well, it's been evolving with everything else. This year's plan, I love. They're reorganizing around technology.
Yes.
Classes instead of other things they've tried in the past. I think that's really useful. It's, you know, my company sells into a dozen verticals. So organizing my vertical doesn't help us at all. But we sell a very narrow value proposition, right? We sell only to the people that answer our five questions.
Clearly.
It's way easier if you're going there to get an idea of the components, you know, connectivity and security, and they're all almost obviously somewhat related. You can't have connectivity without security, for instance.
Yeah.
But it's so much easier to understand the thing. And remember, the number one blocker out there is confusion. If you've divided it up into sort of the component technologies, people get it better that way. And there's companies like, you know, we have a security solution too, but we would be in the connectivity section because that's really, we have security that works with our connectivity, not connectivity that, you know, we don't sell a security solution. We just have one that goes with our stuff, which is more common.
See, it's interesting. And you bring up a good point there. One, there are companies out there that are reluctant to truly, you know, we make our things this way. This is how we have been doing it forever. And that's that sort of legacy mindset. And that's fine. I believe that if you are a company that has a desire to be successful in the future, your journey, your strategy, your strategic thinking has to include all of this wonderful innovation, such as what RTI does. The other area that I think is necessary, if you say that is a fact, that is a reality, you got to participate, then events like IoT Solutions World Congress and the people that go there is a great resource to start learning and begin your journey and to find trusted people like Stan. How's that? Mm-hmm. Did I nail it, Stan?
Yeah, that's pretty good. For you, you know.
Bringing my B game today there, Stan. B game. Not my A game.
No, it's definitely a, you know, in general, most people go to things like this to understand the world. Confusion is the biggest blocker. The confused mind says no. And, you know, it's a big risk. I mean, our average customer is probably spending a couple $100 million building this new intelligent system. And obviously some of them, the famous ones like the EV autonomous vehicles or just vehicle design. They're spending multiple billions of dollars in a decade, and to go into that without understanding what's going on is, you know, is not going to happen. So it's a good place to go and see how others work. And, you know, some people are afraid, well, it's all vendors. Well, the vendors know what they're doing. I hate to say it, but we've failed. We've got 2,000 applications out there. We've failed hundreds of times in that, right? And we've learned a lot, and we definitely have some ways to help people think about their problems. It's different.
All right. We got to wrap it up. How does somebody get a hold of Stan and RTI and why that's important, outside of the fact that if you're contemplating this, I think you need to at least go to, it's RTI.com, right?
RTI.com. Easiest URL there is out there.
It is.
Yeah.
I can remember it.
I can tell you a whole story around that one. But yeah, go to RTI.com. You can learn all about the company. If you want to connect with me, the best way is on LinkedIn. Just go to LinkedIn and look for Stan Schneider. There's a lot of Stan Schneiders in the world, unfortunately. But
yeah,
they're one of them anywhere close to this space.
Yeah. So listeners, go to Stan Schneider. Put a little comment there, RTI, you'll see it, goatee, greenery on his header, quote. That's the stand.
Reach out to Stan. I have a sort of unique LinkedIn page. It's all a bunch of stories. So
yeah.
if you like stories, you can go there and read about why we did the company.
It's cool. See? Look at that.
Why I left my Stanford academic career.
This is getting ready. I said, you got a little PhD at Stanford.
I have a PhD from Stanford, and I left academia because essentially I figured out 95% of academicians are working on problems that simply don't exist. Which, I mean, that's not a dig at research, because that 5% changes the world. But if you're in research, you got about a 95% chance of doing nothing useful.
See, that's a whole other conversation. That would frustrate the hell out of me.
Yeah, it's frustrating. In a company, if you do nothing useful, you fail and you get to go do something else.
Yeah.
University, you can claim you're leading for decades and actually not be having any followers.
That's a whole other conversation. It's like digging a ditch and filling it back in.
All right, you're going to get me in trouble with my academic friend. Nothing against him. Nothing against it at all. It's just a tough game.
It is
running a company, to be fair,
I agree with you 100%. I've been there, done that, and don't be squiffy about running a company. You've got to. That's a whole nother conversation.
Did you say the word squiffy?
I did say squiffy. You want to put it out on a bumper sticker? You can say squiffy. Is that a new word? No. It's
squiffy is a word.
You get it. It's like a little squiffy. And I can't believe it. I got that from a movie, and I can't remember where. But they.
You said squiffy.
So I'm squiffy.
Urban Dictionary. Wow.
Is it?
Yeah, hardworking, fast-paced, enthusiastic person who works in a restaurant or bar. That's squiffy.
There you go. Stan, thank you very much for being on Industrial Talk and saying yes.
You taught me something today.
Yeah, there you go.
That's great.
Yeah, squiffy. Run away. Have a good time on that one. All right. Thank you, Stan, for being on.
Thank you. It was a great talk. Right. Anytime.
Fair not.
If you end up traveling anywhere, let me know. I'll hang out with you.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. See? High beer factor with Stan. You want to hang out with him. You want to have a beer with him. That's the thing. Beer factor high. All right, we're going to wrap it up on the other side. Do not go away. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, that's Stan. Absolutely incredible conversation. Team RTI, they are focused on your success, and you definitely can trust them. Reach out. Go out to Stan Schneider's stat card out on LinkedIn. Reach out. Connect. You're not going to be disappointed. All right. Again, let's get to this next normal, whatever it is. That means going to these events. IoT Solutions World Congress, May 10th through the 12th. Go out to their website, find out more. Again, that is a great event to put on your calendar, because they're all there. I'm just laying it plain. Be a part of the Industrial Talk ecosystem. We're just focused on entertaining, bringing out that human element, and definitely solving problems and being able to collaborate with a bunch of people from around the world. You need to be a part of it. It's easy. Go to industrialtalk.com. Find out more. I'll tell you, it's a lot of fun. Be bold, be brave. Dare greatly. Hang out with people who are bold, brave, and dare greatly, like Stan. You're going to change the world. We're going to have another great conversation.